just witnessed the final moments of the Greek cruise liner MV Oceanus. What was supposed to be a routine 300-mile run from East London, South Africa, up the Durban, was cut dramatically short. On the afternoon of August the 3rd, 1991, the Oceanus was scheduled to leave, but high seas, even in an area renowned for extremely bad weather, delayed the start. Eventually, the captain came to the conclusion that the schedule must be kept. And so, despite swells of 30 feet, the Oceanus left the safety of the harbor in East London. By 9:30 p.m., a large wave or succession of waves battered through the aging craft, and the engine was flooded. It would never be restarted. Without the engine, there was no way to generate power. And that was important for two reasons. One, they couldn't point the vessel into the waves. And so gradually, the strength of the sea would push the waves into a trough, which would exacerbate the flooding and exacerbate the rolling. It also meant that the pumps could not work. Auxiliary pumps were available, but they simply couldn't keep pace with the rush of the sea. And so 571 passengers and crew found themselves in what could easily be described as a hopeless situation. Fortunately, I have never been on a stricken vessel. Very thankful for that, but there is an issue. I've been in a worse situation. The Apostle Paul describes it beautifully in his letter to the Ephesians. In chapter 2, we find these words. Remember that at that time you were separate from Christ, excluded from citizenship in Israel, and foreigners to the covenants of the promise, without hope and without God in the world. But now in Christ Jesus, who were once far away, have been brought near through the blood of Christ. It's a problem every person faces. Without God, there is no hope. Fortunately, the Gospels are replete with examples of Jesus finding people with no hope and meeting their needs. One of my favorite stories comes from Matthew chapter 5. Jesus has been preaching on one side of the lake. He's exhausted. He has a rather harrowing for those in the boat with him, trip to the other side of the lake. And upon arriving, something very interesting happens. He's exhausted from teaching the people. He's exhausted from the storm, especially after his disciples awoke him. When Jesus got out of the boat, a man with an evil spirit came from the tombs to meet him. That's exactly the greeting we want when we go somewhere. Hey, here's a man with an evil spirit who has come down from the tombs to say welcome. There's not going to be any rest for Jesus. But this matter demands his attention. This man lived in the tombs, and no one could bind him anymore, not even with a chain. No one could bind him anymore. We'll find out more about that in a second. But what does this tell you about this man? Why would you bind someone in the first place? Because he's terrorizing the neighborhood. Parents undoubtedly warn their children, hey, if you see the evil guy, run. They probably warned each other too. And the kids probably didn't need that much of a warning. Most children, small as they are capable of picking up on some cues like that. For he had often been chained hand and foot, but he tore the chains apart and broke the irons on his feet. No one was strong enough to subdue him. It doesn't take much guesswork to figure out. Some husbands had gotten some complaints about that guy who's terrorizing the area. Okay, we'll go try to bind him again. But at some point, no one can. The committee goes up, they try to bind him because at least then they can have some peace for a little bit. But their last efforts have failed and failed miserably. Night and day among the tombs and in the hills, he would cry out and cut himself with stones. Life is awful for everyone in the neighborhood, but it's really awful for this man who is possessed, who has no hope. He doesn't have any friends. He wanders and cuts himself. He has no control over anything that he does. When he saw Jesus from a distance, he ran and fell on his knees in front of him. We don't know what a distance is. Was it 100 yards? Was it a mile? Did the man have control for a brief second over his actions? Was he pushed to Jesus? We don't know. But we do know he was pulled to the one who could give him hope. He shouted at the top of his voice, "What do you want with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? Swear to God that you won't torture me." My guess is he did not enunciate. Whether he had the stereotypical movie demon growl, I don't know. But the words were very clear from a meaning standpoint. For Jesus had said to him, "Come out of this man, you evil spirit." And all of a sudden, this man, the most hopeless man around, had hope. Story goes on. All the locals begin to show up to see what has happened. They found this man clothed. He's in his right mind. He's not anything like the guy we tried to chain up time and time again. Something drastic has happened in this man's life, and it can only be explained by Jesus. But sadly, the locals want Jesus to go. They know that this man is incredibly powerful, but they see that that power has been nothing compared to the power wielded by the Son of God. But then an interesting conversation takes place. As the man wants to know, can he go with Jesus? As Jesus was getting into the boat, the man who had been demon-possessed begged to go with him. That makes sense. Minutes ago, my life was terrible. Now, it's been changed. Jesus did not let him, but said, "Go home to your family and tell them how much the Lord has done for you and how he has had mercy on you." If the man went with Jesus, he would have an incredible story to tell to everyone he met. But he has an even more powerful story to those who know him. My guess is he had quite the reputation. I don't know if you've ever had a family reunion where everyone sits and talks about the crazy uncle or crazy cousin. Growing up, that's what we did. I'm not saying that's the right thing. At some point, I realized I was somebody else's crazy cousin. We're all that crazy cousin to someone. But I guarantee you can't have a demon-possessed guy in your neighborhood living in the tombs, cutting himself with stones and crying out, and you don't talk about him. This guy had a reputation. So when he shows up and says, let me tell you how Jesus changed my life, people took note because they say, I either know you or, oh, I've heard of you. This was not a story that could just be discarded. So the man went away and began to tell in the Decapolis how much Jesus had done for him, and all the people were amazed. That's our task. We may not have lived in tombs or cut ourselves with stones. Doesn't matter if you have or not, seriously. But we've got to go and tell how much Jesus has done for us. But that's a really uncomfortable. There is a massive problem with going and telling how much Jesus has done for us because it requires us to admit that our lives were a disaster without the saving grace of Jesus Christ. You know what I like to think? You know, I'm a pretty good guy. I was 99.5% of the way there, and I got to tell you, I've got a wonderful story. God kicked in like a half percent, and now life is wonderful. No, that's not how it goes. My life is a disaster without the saving and changing grace of Jesus Christ, period. Not a good guy. I'm not almost there. Satan has two lies. He has a lot of lies he loves to tell, but he has two that are extremely pervasive. One is, you know what, you're doing, quite frankly, about as good as a human could do. The other is, you are so lost, God doesn't want you. Just give up. Both of those lies are believed so often. Just give up. There's no hope for you. Or, you know what? You're doing pretty well. And as a human, you know what? You're never going to be perfect, so tell you what, let's call it even. Move on. But that's not how it works. We've got to share the hope that we have. Back on the Oceanus, there didn't seem to be a lot of hope. By the early morning hours, even though the seas were still high, it was decided to go ahead and launch lifeboats. There were enough lifeboats for everyone. But as you can see from the picture, at some point, the ship became listing so heavily on the starboard side, and those may have been the boats that are launched. The boats were either in the water or torn off, and on the port side, if you lower the boats, they just clang into the side of the vessel. Fortunately, 376 folks had been rescued by ships summoned via battery-powered radios. It was a busy shipping channel. It was a harrowing experience rescuing those people. Still, they were off and saved. But that left 225 people, and the situation was not improving. And so, at first light, the South African Air Force launched two Puma helicopters. They had more than two, but the two could work at a time. Unfortunately, what was not shared with the passengers and crew was how unfavorable the math was. 5 hours were probably needed. No one knew if they had that much. Now, the passengers did have life vests on, but if the ship sank, currents are extremely strong in the area, the people would be spread out, and given that a preponderance of the passengers were elderly, and the coldness of the water, hypothermia would undoubtedly set in before many could be rescued. But the South African Air Force worked. And they pulled two off. It was a difficult task because this picture is stationary. The vessel was very much not stationary. And so if you lower enough cable and then the vessel sinks 10 feet, all of a sudden you have cable. And if someone's only partially on, they're 10 feet in the air. The vessel approached a 45 degree angle too. So just climbing up to be lifted, been a challenge. But 18 hours after the hull was breached and 90 minutes before she would go under, the final two survivors, crew members, were lifted off the Oceanus.
Moss and Julian to be rescued.
We put the harness on together, made the signal. I'd done it for all the passengers, now I did it for us. And we got hoisted up, and it's an incredible feeling. Looking back, you're just getting lifted off to safety, and there's my ship, the Oceanus, just below us, on its side, nose.
Everyone was saved. When they went home from work, from their vacation, people said, "How'd it go?" Do you think they said, "Another day"? No, because there are no forgettable rescues. In fact, I'll wager no one had to be prompted. They probably walked up and told people on their flights home, "Hey, let me tell you what just happened to me. You won't believe this." And it's not because anything I did. It's because I was rescued. Love the words of Jesus. Luke 19. "For the Son of Man came to seek and save the lost." For those thinking, "There's no hope for me." No, you're exactly the reason Jesus came. And you nothing, all of us. You're not the only one in your situation. Every person who has ever walked the face of the earth needs the saving grace of Jesus Christ. Amen. And so, if that's your situation, or maybe if you're someone like me, who needs to be sharing more often, "Hey, let me tell you how Jesus saved me and continues to change me." In 1 Peter 3:15, "Always be prepared to give an answer to everyone who asks you to give a reason for the hope that you have." If you're here today and you've never heard about that hope, ask anyone here. We would love to share it with you.